spews because he's entitled to spew hateful crap, quote, because I'm a Christian.
Okay!
Yeah.
Don't you, South America!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host.
We have
Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We almost began the evening. Well, we kind of did begin the evening with a little bit of a screw-up. I had the rerun stream going at the same time as the live stream. It isn't anymore. That was only a few seconds. Near miss. Thanks, chat room. Thanks, Texas Betsy. Thanks, Sparky, for the heads-up. That could have been annoying. But now it's fixed. Here it is, the 24th day of May, 2013. Friday on the front porch. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, where at resides the Listen Live button. And where you can find the PayPal button and the traditional overland carbon-intensive mail address for helping keeping things going that way. Giving Boss Man Wayne something to smile about when he goes to the mailbox and finds something besides an echo. We will, as usual, be trying to raise $150 this evening just to keep things going. It is Friday on the front porch. A little time to kick back and relax. Cuss and discuss. Felt a little bit lucky earlier this evening. Found a couple of slabs of ribs in the manager's special markdown bin at the local grocer. So after showtime tonight, I'm going to fire up the stream and fire up the smoker, and we'll have some yummy ribs over the weekend. Yeah, they were marked down from like $9 to $3.75. They were probably past their best buy date, but hey, who's counting? I like to rub them and smoke them with hickory, and then make my own little barbecue sauce to mop them with. Getting excited just thinking about it. That's Friday on the front porch kind of stuff. Mosey on up to the porch. Put your feet up on the porch rail, whatever. Bring things to the table that maybe we otherwise wouldn't. I've got one high on the list there. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I've got one way up on the list in that sort of wouldn't ordinarily do this, but yeah, we are. It comes from, Isaac sent it along. And it's a story out of Tasmania. But it could just as easily be out of Busted Knuckle, Oklahoma, or Kansas, or just about, you know, anywhere America, because, we don't prize actual reason that highly. So you're living in your house there, and you hear a bunch of strange noises. And your first response is, what? Yeah. Set up the video camera with the infrared recorder on it because you think your house is hainted. Yeah, I think we got us a haint. Only they don't talk like that in Tasmania. Got a haint. Got a ghost. Because, you know, ghosties are real. Because they make TV shows about them. You know, ghosty hunters and ancient aliens. And so our hero sets up his video camera in the kitchen because he's hearing strange noises. You know, ooh, 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 strange noises. Ooh. Strange noises. So, yeah, camcorder sitting there, rolling away. Our hero, having pressed the record button, heads off to work to earn his daily bread, thinking he'll come home and maybe have some evidence of a ghostie or two. Poltergeist. Malevolent spirit. Woo! And, you know, maybe you can sell it to a TV show. And they'll run it, right? Because he's got evidence of a ghost. Only he didn't. Turns out he didn't have a ghost at all. What he had was a 28-year-old wife who was having sex with his 16-year-old son. Ooh! She has since pleaded guilty in the Supreme Court of Australia, the 5 counts of sex with a minor. She said, I didn't know 16 was below the age of consent. That was the defense. I didn't know... Because it's Friday on the front porch, Betsy. Why is this in the news? Because it's Friday on the front porch. And also because out there, there are people who believe in ghosts. When in fact, it's their 28-year-old wife having sex with their 16-year-old son. Ooh! Yeah, that was her defense. I didn't know it was illegal for me to have sex with my 16-year-old stepson. Now, this was not, right, the stepson. So there's no, yeah, banjo music or anything involved. I'm thinking she rather missed the point. She does understand now that it's a relationship that cannot go forward, and the marriage with the 16-year-old's father has since been dissolved. Divorce, of course. Texas Betsy asking, I'm just wondering why the man, the wife, or the kid had publicized this. I'm guessing none of the above. But it's public. I mean, if the laws work the way they do here, or similarly, Anglo-jurisprudential kind of, it's probably public record. Now, it's not public record what the woman's name is or where she is or anything like that, because they've got some sort of a shield law in Australia. But that defense, I didn't know that 16 was below the age of consent for me to have sex with my stepson. Stepson. Right. At first, she tried to get out of it with her husband by saying it was just cuddling. The son, however, told a rather radically different story, saying, Oh, yeah, we did it a bunch. defense lawyer Steve Chopping. No, really. Explained to the court, she accepts this is not a relationship which can or will continue. She remains in custody. Like I said, not the everyday kind of story that you're going to have here on the Horn, but it highlights something. A thought process. A sort of blip in cognition that can be ascribed to a whole bunch of human beings. What would overcome your reason to the point that you would be convinced that you had a ghostie in your house, that you had a haint? I mean, do you go over the plumbing to make sure there's not, like, air in a line that's making a funny noise, or, you know, squirrels in the attic, or, I don't know, Tasmanian devils in Tasmania in the attic, for all I know? Or do you just leap right to, I've got a haint? I don't know. That headline. Father who set up video to capture paranormal activity accidentally films his girlfriend having sex with his teenage son. Oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't a marriage, it was just a girlfriend. Well, that changes everything. Not really. It all started when she walked into his bedroom to discuss driving lessons. Is that what we're calling it now? Paranormal activity? Paramoric activity? Okay, I can admit, sure. Woo! Pass. I just wanted to get that out there. Because it's funny, but it's not the least funny part of it, probably being people who assume that there are ghosts in their houses when they're hearing sex noises. There's something to be said. Is this a human thing that even if we're hearing sex noises in the house, that we assume that they're ghosties because we don't want to confront the actual reality of the 28-year-old girlfriend and the 16-year-old son? Being Friday on the front porch, though, a little bit of good news. I think this is a good one for our side. You remember the story, of course, of the woman who was holding her toddler in the aftermath of the Moore, Oklahoma tornado, when Wolf Blitzer, who had inexplicably escaped the Situation Room tried to interview her.
Well, you have to thank the Lord, don't you? Thank the Lord!
And she had the courage to say, actually, Wolf, I'm an atheist. She was really rather humane about it. So guess what? The woman who had her world blown away, Rebecca Witzman, now a group of atheists and free thinkers have set up a site to provide relief for her. And they have, as of this telling, raised more than $50,000 to help her. That's saying something. There were no ghosts, no haints, no poltergeists, no spooks, no spirits. Just people determined to do good things, which I guess, in turn, makes the words of Pope Frank kind of spot on. Via Vatican Radio on Wednesday, he declared, not that he's got any particular authority to do so, he declared that atheists can be nice people too. All of us have this commandment at heart, he said. Do good and do not do evil. Unless, of course, we're involved in the Argentine Dirty War. All of us. But, Father, this is not a Catholic. He cannot do good. Yes, he can. He must. Not can. Must. This commandment for everyone to do good, I think, is a beautiful path towards peace. If we, each doing our own part, if we do good to others, if we meet there doing good and we go slowly, gently, little by little, we will make that culture of encounter. We need that so much. But I don't believe, Father. I'm an atheist. But do good. We will meet one another there. You know, that's kind of a radical departure for the Roman Catholic Church, who has a long history of setting fire to people who don't believe in their magic cracker and Jesus meat theory of salvation. He wasn't proselytizing the atheists. He was telling his own flock to leave them the F alone, without saying leave them the F alone. So lo and behold, there's an example. More than $50,000 raised to help a woman who had the courage to stand up in the midst of tragedy and say, I do not thank God, nor do I blame God, because, well, you know, he's imaginary. Cool, huh? If only everybody could be so gracious. Not so much. In particular, you knew where this was going, didn't you? In particular, the Beckerhead has a theory. Charming. Just charming. I think the non-existent, invisible, juvenile delinquent with a beard in the sky every day for the Beckerhead. Sometimes he writes the entire show for me. And it would be impolite for me not to exhibit some kind of gratitude. So, in the wake of the story of Rebecca Witzman telling Wolf Blitzer that she's an atheist and really didn't thank God, there's not really a God to thank. Well, this didn't set it all well with, I don't know, what is he, a Mormon Pope wannabe of the airwaves now? Apparently standing there in front of a picture of George Washington kneeling next to a horse, and I don't want to know any more beyond that. Well, Glenn Beck explained Wolf Blitzer's dilemma.
A really bizarre, really bizarre exchange on CNN during the coverage of the tornado. It was Wolf Blitzer and the survivor of the tornado in Oklahoma. Watch.
Such a sweet little guy.
Yeah.
All right, well, you're blessed. Yeah. Brian, your husband, is blessed.
Brian.
Anders is
Brian.
Blessed.
Brian.
Yeah, Brian. You like Brian, huh? That's your dad. Well, we're happy you're here. You guys did a great job.
Yeah.
And once again, we're subjected, or I'm subjected. Lucky you, you're not. I'm subjected to the video of Wolf Blitzer groping the toddler's foot. Yeah, probably needs to grow another year or so and then fatten him up a little bit. Toddler groping with Wolf Blitzer.
I guess you got to thank the Lord, right?
Yeah.
Do you thank the Lord for that split-second decision?
I'm actually an atheist.
Oh, you are. All right, perfect. But you made the right call.
Yeah, yeah. We are here, I don't blame anybody for thanking the Lord.
Of course not. So.
Good for her. I'm going to make
a
statement.
Good for her. That's about as good as it's going to get from Glenn Beck. Good for her. But tell us what really happened to Beckerhead, please.
And here, before I make my observation, I really like Wolf Blitzer, and I think he's a really good man. But I've done radio and television long enough to know that question was peculiar the way it was stated.
You got that? He doesn't even need to set up a video camera to know that there's paranormal activity involved. He's been doing radio and television long enough to know that there was something... Well, there was something wrong with the way that that all worked out. Because he's been doing radio and television for a long time, and I don't know, people have been hot-footing his shoes and whatever, you know, putting plastic wrap on his toilet seat, whatever. They thought I was crazy, but I caught him. I fooled him with the strawberries.
Even for Wolf, who I think is a religious man, just wasn't natural. It seemed forced. When everybody came into the office today, they said...
It seemed forced. How did it seem forced? It's Oklahoma, Glenn. This is just some rotten outhouse luck on the part of... Wolf Blitzer. Who really shouldn't ever leave the Situation Room. Is that the first time that the Beckerhead has ever said something nice about a member of the for-profit media that he otherwise accuses of being liberal? It just seemed wrong. Why was it wrong? Was it wrong because somebody who doesn't believe in the giant bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky finally got an opportunity to speak up for the 20% of America who also does not believe in invisible friends? Then again, well, we'll just leave Glenn's personal cosmology out of this. Call up!
You know, do you see that? It was weird. And I'm a believer, and I wouldn't ask the question that way.
In what? So Glenn, the Beckerhead now says that Wolf got the question, he asked it wrong. It's like the old joke about the folks at the rest home. New guy comes along, they're all sitting out on the porch, and he notices that every now and then somebody will say, 26! And all the other folks sitting in the rocking chairs on the porch will... oh! 19, same thing. 37, same thing. 52, same thing. And since he's the new guy, he says, What's going on with the numbers? And you're laughing. And they explained to him, listen, we've been here a long time. Everybody knows everybody's jokes. So we just wrote them down and numbered them. And now, you know, we're older. Life is getting shorter. Instead of taking the time to tell the whole joke, we just tell the number, and it's still just as funny. And the guy says, well, I'm new here, but can I try? And they said, sure. And he said, 71. And everybody just looked at him, stone-faced, silence. And he said, well, what happened? They said, you told it wrong. Yeah, that was it. Wolf told it wrong.
Before I make my observation, I really like Wolf Blitzer, and I think he's a really good man. But I've done radio and television long enough to know that question was peculiar, the way it was stated.
Peculiar.
Even for Wolf, who I think is a religious man. It just wasn't natural. It seemed forced.
It wasn't natural. Unnatural. Unnatural, I tell you. In Shakespeare, when Shakespeare uses the word unnatural, he means that it's wicked, demonic, unnatural. Right?
When everybody came into the office today, they said, you know, do you see that? It was weird. And I mean, I'm a believer, and I wouldn't ask the question that way. It's not as nefarious, perhaps.
He asked it wrong. That's why I told the joke in the first place. 71.
Perhaps, as you might think, I want to tell you what my theory is on this. I think he was fed some information about the guests they had on beforehand. That's what producers do. Given some questions that he should ask, etc., etc. Some producer who is sympathetic to the atheist plight or just...
What? He really is going to start talking about the strawberries in a minute, isn't he? Some producer who's sympathetic to the atheist plight. I didn't know there was a plight. I missed the memo. What plight? 20% of America just doesn't believe in the bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Or have various and sundry other invisible friends. That's fine. It's okay. It's not a plight. I mean, the Pope done said so, right?
Doesn't like Christians or whatever it is. Thought it was...
Oh, doesn't like Christians. Oh, they're persecuting us. Oh, the persecuting hurts. Oh.
It's important to point out that in the middle of the heartland in America, where most people are God-fearing, there are atheists there too. Doesn't have to be nefarious.
Except you're making it out to be, well, nefarious.
Don't think for a second it's not a big deal to them. In fact, one of the news blurbs written about the exchange, the commenter said, when was the last time you saw an atheist on national news? I'd like to point out, every time, they just don't say it.
Because he knows that. Because he has the secret wisdom of Kolob. See them all the time. They just don't say anything. They're sneaky that way. Strawberries.
It's important because it informs others what they are being taught about atheists from atheism and the bully pulpit and other sources of bias that is not correct reflection of reality in plain view. Okay.
Huh?
We are not fighting against flesh and bone.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Or, as one of my heroes, Bugs Bunny, might have put it, oh, Margaret.
What they are being taught about atheists from atheism and the bully pulpit and other sources of bias that is not correct reflection of reality in plain view. Okay. We are not fighting against flesh and bone. We are fighting the forces of spiritual darkness.
Wait a minute. Rebecca Vitzman and her in-arms toddler were manifestations of the forces of darkness?
suppose. The devil shows up in a number of inexplicable guises, blackjack dealers. We're going back.
I'd like to point out, every time you just, they just don't say it. It's important because it informs others what they are being taught about atheists from atheism and the bully pulpit and other sources of bias that is not correct reflection of reality in plain view. Okay. We are not fighting against...
I get the idea that every morning is a struggle for Glenn. I do. I get the idea that some mornings his bacon talks. And other mornings, other mornings, the little cacophony that the rest of us recognize as a cute little noise that's because there's little air pockets trapped in the Rice Krispies, and so they go. And snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies. That there are Bible verses in it, or Book of Mormon, or Pearl of Great Price verses, or something. I get the idea that reality is a thread to which Glenn clings ever so tenuously, and one of these days he's just going to tear his clothes off on TV and run in front of the camera and start running around the room babbling about demons. Hopefully they'll cut away before he finishes the act.
Against flesh and bone. We are fighting the forces of spiritual darkness. And it doesn't matter what people's intent are.
Well, of course not. When you're battling the forces of spiritual darkness, the intent of people is immaterial because, well, you know, Satan, right? You know, when intent is completely out of the question, and you know, the law operates that way sometimes. If you get pulled over for doing 112 in a 35 zone, and you look at the cop and you say, well, I didn't mean to do 112, the cop's going to say, sign here anyway, okay, would you please, because I got to give you the ticket. Or, for instance, if you happen to show up in the Supreme Court of Australia down in Tasmania somewhere, and you say, I didn't mean to have sex with my boyfriend's 16-year-old son who was underage. I didn't mean to have sex with an underage boy. The court says, ignorantia juris non excusat. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Her intent she didn't mean to have sex with an underage kid. You know, intent is not important in some aspects of the law, and apparently when one is doing battle with the forces of darkness that are constantly yammering away inside Glenn Beck's noggin.
But I will tell you that that was there for a reason. When faced with a life...
That was there for a reason. I'll get down with that. I can play with that. I can work with that. It was there for a reason. And the reason is that Wolf Blitzer, multi-millionaire member of the for-profit media, was sent out to burnish his fading credibility by interacting with the hoi polloi. And because he has about as much in common with Rebecca Vitzman as a hog does with a Sunday suit, he thought he would... Well, I'm in Oklahoma. We'll talk about Jesus. Everybody talks about Jesus in Oklahoma, right? Yeah. In other words, it was an assumption that he made that was based on, bathed in, clothed in, suffused by his privilege. His class privilege, his wealth privilege, his bubble privilege. His gender privilege? Sure. See how reason works? Because he's got all of those things. But no. No. Salt Lake City Spock here thinks otherwise.
That could slip out of your hands at any moment. Most Americans cry out for help from God. Some people don't. Penn Jillette wouldn't do it. I mean, if he was hanging on for dear life by his fingernails, he'd be thinking it through, and the last thing he would do is call out for God because he didn't believe in him. He's not a fraud. But most Americans are just lazy. They believe in God, but then they're lazy and they just don't cry out to him unless they need help. And if you need proof of that, remember how full our churches were post 9/11. And then what is important here is look who we were when we turned back to God. The results were spectacular. We were...
Wait a minute. No, wait. This is about 9/11? I mean, we know that Alex Jones told us that somebody in the government done steered them tornadoes into Moore, Oklahoma. We know that. But now, the dead Osama has risen from the grave to cause tornado. Oh, dear. We have trouble in River City. Oh, my. Now, wait a minute. When we turned back to God after 9/11, we had spectacular results. I want to hear about these spectacular results, don't you? Because, see, I remember... an illegal war against people in Afghanistan. I remember bounties being put out in up and down the hills and hollers of Afghanistan so that one goat herd would drop the dime on another goat herd, and the goat herd that got the dime dropped on him would wind up in a diaper on an airplane being flown from Bagram Air Force Base to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where that person is now trying to starve himself to death because he's given up on the very idea of any further participation in existence on this planet because his life has been rendered a futile nullity, not by some invisible sky critter, but by the operation of dictatorial, tyrannical processes. Okay, let's hear about this success.
But most Americans are just lazy. They believe in God, but then they're lazy and they just don't cry out to him unless they need help. And if you need proof of that, remember how full our churches were post 9/11. And then what is important here is look who we were when we turned back to God. The results were spectacular.
We were
our best selves.
Were we our best selves when we were killing probably in excess of a million non-combatants in Iraq? Was that our best selves? Because while I would not dare ever to speak for you, I will speak for myself, and I will say that when that news broke, along around about Halloween of 2004, I felt really nasty. I felt waves of endless shame rolling over me. I saw photographs that apparently the Beckerhead did not see of a father carrying the battered and beaten and broken body of his toddler daughter out of the rubble of an explosion that we had caused, and in which we referred to the battered and beaten and broken body of the little toddler girl as collateral damage. See, I remember that. That was apparently, according to the Beckerhead, our best selves. Oh, do go on.
We need to put others ahead of our own self. There are those who are not merely content with not believing in God. There are others trying to steer others away as well. And that's the difference. I want you to look at this interview from this morning. Watch.
Oh, no. Piss off, Glenn. Enough already. See how it works? Just throw something out there like our better selves and, you know, move on. Oh, we were our better selves when we were slaughtering innocents. You know, that was our better selves when we massacred Fallujah
and used weapons there that are not legal within the laws of warfare. That was our better selves when we abrogated the Geneva Conventions. Better selves. And no evidence. We were better. See, we had a lot of people in church. That was our better selves. Fe. Too much. Too much. Yeah, Waggy in the chat room noting, that 2-mile-wide tornado was there for a reason. We won't talk about that reason, though. Just another day in America. Just another day in the world. Where spirits and spooks and goblins and ghosties and haints walk among us. And you can make a reference to a tornado and... So you know what? Good for the people who have pulled together to help out Rebecca Vitzman and her family rebuild their lives there in Moore, Oklahoma. Good for them. Good for them. How many people do you think she's received a certain amount of undesired fame for this? And I'm sure she cannot wait until the day her life returns to its normal, to the extent that any life is ever normal, returns to what, the normal anonymity of any town, any day, Oklahoma, USA. I didn't bother to go and look, but I wonder how many sleazy, snarky, hate-filled comments have been offered by the believers about the fact that she dared to say she's an atheist. That didn't just happen. Some atheist producer steered Wolf Blitzer wrong. I set up my camera to capture the paranormal activity in my house. Only it was para-amoral activity. Jesus. So that's the beginning of our little Friday on the Front Porch conversation. The lines are open, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Easy, either way you choose. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm well.
I hope we got a good enough connection here. You're kind of fading in, fading out. I hope that.
No, we got a dandy. It sounds. I mean, unless are you on a cell phone or?
Yeah, I'm on a cell. I am, and that's all the phone I got these days. So you know, that's what I can do.
No worries.
But,
no worries.
I was just catching the tail end of your rant there. More and more I get just less and less involved and concerned about what's going on day to day. You know, I went over to the coffee shop this morning. I'm over here in Portland, Oregon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dave in Portland, Oregon.
Right.
That's me. Okay. I went over to the coffee shop this morning to get my little cup of joe, and there was a leading story in the Oregonian, our local rag we have here, about that bridge that collapsed. Gee, I guess our infrastructure is crumbling at an increasingly fast pace.
Yes.
And Yeah, I guess.
We just make assumptions, Dave. For instance, we assume that we can build a bridge in 1954, and it'll be there forever.
Yeah. Well, I've experienced some of that on a first-hand basis over here in Portland. I mean, it's just up the road, you know, where that bridge collapsed is, a couple hundred miles up the road. It's no big deal. But, I mean, I-5 goes right through Portland, you know. I don't know if you've never been here to Portland, have you?
No, sadly. I hope to remedy that sometime.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little town. It was at one time. Have you been to Los Angeles? Have you been over there?
No. San Francisco is the extent of my California experience, and prior to that, the furthest west I'd ever been was Vegas.
Wow, yeah. L.A. is a lot different than San Francisco. I haven't spent much time over there, but I spent most of my life here in Portland or in Los Angeles. It's been my main haunts. Although I have had the pleasure to get out there to West Virginia and the East Coast at times. But anyway, our infrastructure over here is crumbling away. I remember a few years ago, it was real funny, they had a large-sized utility truck with one of these little cherry-picker jobbies on the back. I mean, it was a big thing. It was like a fire truck or something. But it just got swallowed up in this, in this residential intersection in our city. It was sort of biblical, you know. But that stuff's happening all over the place. It's just the time. I think I was reading something about how in World War II, after World War II, you know, the Germans and the Japanese did a lot better in the next decades because they had their whole infrastructure just completely destroyed, and it was all everything there is post 1945. You know, but over here we've got this antiquated, old, worn out garbage that's just dragging us down. But of course,
Dave, it doesn't have to be that way.
This is a
function of the operation of national will. And we do not have the national will anymore to do great things.
Well, I think that they have to just get to the point. It's like the outrage has to get big enough, and things just have to come down enough, and people just got to say enough is enough. And, we're just lying around here waiting for something to happen, I guess. The thing I wanted to talk about today, actually, though, was that something's been overriding on my mind for a while, and I just wanted to share it with somebody that could share it with and share it with some other people. But I have a little story that was just pressing my mind. It's funny. It's kind of a historical story, but it's about I've spent a lot of time in Southern California, and I love it down there, and the infrastructure down there is crumbling away too, like everything. But this is about back in, before there was anything out there, before anything we know was out there in the late 18th century. You know, the Spaniards had sent this expedition up from New Spain, which was Mexico, to Southern California to explore, opportunities for expansion. They were getting a little paranoid about the Russians coming down and the Americans coming across, and they wanted to solidify their hold on Southern California and California in general. And they got there to around the San Diego area, and they looked around and there was no gold. What a disappointment. Like in New Spain, there was nothing to pillage there. There were just a bunch of people sitting around in the sun and sand of Southern California, these Indians. And these Spaniards, this expedition, they almost starved. They couldn't survive. They almost died. And they were lucky to be rescued by another expedition that came to save them. But they didn't realize that these people that were living there in Southern California were naked, almost naked, living in the fun and sun of California. But these people knew how to access the wealth that was all around them. And I just have this deep, deep-seated belief that there's just wealth all around us. We don't know how to access it. See, these Spaniards didn't know how to access the wealth, so they almost starved. Like we're starving almost right now. You know, whether you're in West Virginia or in Portland, Oregon, or in Seattle, Washington, we're all starving, but there's wealth all around us. You see, it's in the sun, it's in the wind, it's there. It's just there for us to take. But these assholes won't let us do it. I'm sorry, excuse my French.
No, that's okay. You can get away with that here.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that you know, we're living in this antiquated old system of doing things. We don't know what we're doing, and there's a really, really bright future, I believe, just on the horizon. We just need to learn how to access the wealth that's all around us, and that's bad for the people on top because it means that everyone will be able to access it. I mean, you can't patent the sun, you can't patent the wind, you can't. You know, everyone's got it. It's right there for all of us. You know, we just need to learn how to live in the environment that we live in and make it work. That's the point of my story. I just think that there's just vast and unlimited wealth all around us.
Well, it's interesting that you would bring that topic up, Dave, because sitting here in front of me on one of the many tabs that are open on my screen is the story of a little something that happened yesterday in the Senate of the United States. Was it Prop 37 that would have in California that would have mandated the labeling of genetically modified foods? One of the props. We talked about it extensively, and one of the things that I was concerned about was had it passed. It would have immediately gone to the Supreme Court and been challenged. And given the composition of the Supreme Court, you know, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, there's a distinct likelihood that despite all their persistent cries of states' rights, the Supreme Court would have stricken it. So, on Thursday, Bernie Sanders of Vermont introduced an amendment to the Farm Bill, and all it said, and it was quite simple, really, it said that states do have the right to require that genetically modified food, frankenfoods, be labeled. It didn't say that we have to, it merely said that states have the right to. You know, states' rights.
Absolutely.
Seems pretty simple, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Naturally, it went down to ignominious defeat. In discussing it afterward, Senator Sanders said an overwhelming majority of Americans favor GMO labeling, but virtually all of the major biotech and food corporations in the country oppose it. Today's vote is a step forward on an important issue that we are going to continue to work on. The people of Vermont and the people of America have a right to know what's in the food they eat. But, yeah, it got whipped. I don't even see here that there was a... You want to know how bad it got whipped, Dave? 71 against 27-4.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that these people don't represent us. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a given. We just gotta get past that and move on in our own way. I really don't think the system as we know it has got a long time, you know, has a lot of future. I'm not dissuaded by any of that from my own view that in the system we have now is just defunct, and it's just a matter of just saying the final epitaph on it, and getting on with things, getting on with life. I don't think that the system they have it sounds like a buzzword or something, but it's unsustainable. It's in the short term. In the short term. So I'm not really...
Well, yeah, in the short term, but in the long term, you know, when we talk about things like GMOs, you know, Frankenfoods, Dave, one of the things that concerns me is that Monsanto is actually, and you know, don't look, nobody need look out the window for the black helicopters or tornadoes being steered toward them or anything. But the fact of the matter is that the long history of human interaction with agriculture tells us that what Monsanto and that crowd are doing is setting the planet up for plague and for famine. Because, you know, biodiversity means something. And, you know, I welcome anybody who wants to try to go and grab yourself an ear of number 2 Roundup Ready field-grade corn, take it home, put it in a pot of boiling water, and boil it as long as you would a roasting ear. And then try to eat it.
The whole thing with the Frankenfoods and Monsanto and everything, it's inherently un-American. It's inherently un-American, and it goes against biodiversity and diversity of all kinds. I'm really convinced that this may be the breaking point where people just say enough is enough. I'm totally against it, and anyone with any sense has got to be. It's where we're headed is a train wreck, and I don't know. Maybe that's what it's going to take. It's just a train wreck. It's just get this over with. Let's.
Yeah, that's kind of, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but that's sort of that's the voice of frustration.
I'm past frustration. I'm at resignation. That it's the system has failed, the system is screwed, and we got to just think about the other side. At this point, I don't know. I'm just not really too much invested in the present system that we have. I don't see it as lasting too much longer. I can't believe it could. I can't believe that in the form that it's in the direction it's going, there's any way we can just continue on like this, burning Black Death and not living in total. Opposition to the forces of nature. I don't see how can it continue. It can't.
Well, consider this, Dave. We probably didn't recognize it, and certainly there won't be any big splashy stories on CNN or any of the other for-profit media about it. But in Bonn, Germany, today they closed a meeting. Or they wrapped up a meeting. It's been going on. It was hosted by the Global Water System Project. And they announced that within a generation to two generations, which is a very short period of time when you think about it, the majority of people on Earth will be facing severe water shortages.
Oh, yeah, I was reading about that myself. I know. Water. The Ogallala Aquifer, I was reading an article about that the other day. We're on the edge here. We're on the edge. Let's just face it. Okay? We are on the edge. We are on the edge, and we got to decide whether we're going to jump off the side or we're going to make things work. That's all. And it's really plain and simple and clear. And actually, I feel a little less scared now than I felt maybe a couple of years ago when I thought there was a chance of how can we turn it around. We got to turn it around. There's no choice.
Yeah, the folks at this conference issued a statement saying that the handicap will be self-inflicted, but that it is entirely avoidable. They went on and said, in the short span of one or two generations, the majority of the 9 billion people on Earth will be living under the handicap of severe pressure on fresh water. We are flying the red flag out of our conference here. These self-inflicted wounds have long-term legacy effects that are not easy to turn around. I don't know if you caught last night's show, but you know there was some talk of the fact that I think it was Will who brought it up, that the right wing and so forth. You know, they like to think on the one hand they deny science. You know, I ain't no evolution. I ain't related to no monkey. And on the other hand, they expect science to provide the answers to the pressing problems of continued human existence on the planet.
Yeah. Okay. It's not even. You know, I'm getting past the point where I'm even really paying attention to any of these politicians, because the Democrats are just a straight man, and the Republicans are the Curly or the Lou Costello or whatever they are. Seriously, anybody who thinks that we can stay with the status quo is entirely insane. Entirely insane. I'm just to the point where I'm walking toward a cell tower now, because my signal to you is breaking up. I think I'm getting a little better signal now. But here's the thing. I just think that we've got to figure out a new way of doing things really quick here, you know, because this is we're getting close to a breaking point, and it's just in one way I'm kind of scared, but in another way I feel really freed and confident that there's a way we're going to find it. I think that.
Well, the thing is, you know, what the guys at the Bond conference said,
they're
Dave.
Dead as fried chicken. They're just done. We got to figure out another way of doing things, and you know.
Well, the people in Bonn at this conference said, again, they are self-inflicted wounds. But the problem they identified is that once created, the problems are not easy to turn around. On the other hand, we do know straight up there are a few things we could stop doing and maybe make a dent in it. There's no doubt whatsoever that things like mountaintop removal and fracking and large-scale strip mining of any form, witness, for instance, what goes on in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming, are humongous pressures on existing water resources. Then there's stuff like Keystone XL, which runs the risk of ruining an aquifer. We began the week talking about the depletion of the aquifer underneath the nation's breadbasket that was done for nothing more than want to. I'm going to try to be charitable and not say greed. If we stop doing those, you know, a drunk has to stop drinking. An addict has to stop using. And we've got to stop doing the things that are significantly reducing the likelihood of the continued existence of this species on this particular planet.
Yeah, we've got to do these things. We have to stop what we're doing. People are afraid because it's going to be painful in the short term, but I think on the short term it will be a lot better. I just don't see any other alternative than stopping things as they are, stopping the world as we know it, and it'll be, again, it'll be better, way better on the other side. It'll be a lot better on the other side. We just got to stop all this coal, all this oil, all this natural gas. Any fossil fuels are poison. More is poisonous. Got to stop it.
All right, David. Sounds like you're breaking up a little bit, but it's been a great conversation. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Yeah, I'm just getting more and more today.
All right. Take care, Dave. Calling from out Portland way. That's our buddy Dave. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Grant.
Well, hey, Grant, how are you?
From Portland.
Hey, it's Oregon night.
That's right, it must be. Hey, I wanted to bring to everybody's attention that, speaking of Monsanto, there is a march on Monsanto, a global march on Monsanto, tomorrow. And it's going around in various cities. It's been bouncing around the Twitterverse, and it's trending. And I wanted to let everybody know that that's going on.
Excellent. Well, I mean, do you have any particulars about the where of it?
Oh, I could pull it up here. Just a sec. Maybe. Let's see. worldwide protest against Monsanto kicks off on May 25th. Worldwide march doesn't say on this thing I'm looking at right now exactly where it is, but I would assume D.C., New York, L.A., you know.
Aren't there headquarters in St. Louis?
Quite frankly, I don't know.
Something says that they, I think they are. That's why they own the Missouri delegation.
Right. So I thought that would fit nicely. So, you know, when people are doing their food porn, just think of the marchers.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you're some, look it up, and if you're some, add one more pair of feet to the march.
Absolutely.
Off your seat, into the street.
Oh, and I wanted to lateral something there to Dave, the last caller, if I could.
Sure.
Oh, Dave, I know you work with homeless people. There's an organization called Oregon Recode, and what they do, it's a group of lawyers. They go around and they review state and city ordinance, state laws and city ordinances that discriminate against the homeless. I don't know if your group is hooked up with them, but give it a look. See, I think you'll like what you see. Anyway, just wanted to let him know before I forget. So that's kind of what's going on. There's been a lot of chatter about the various things going on and the vote that went on in the Senate. I was just looking at that. You know, it occurs to me, if they're going to try to go after Obamacare 37 times, this is the kind of thing we should be running this play every week. You know, with the one-liner, states have the rights to pass labeling laws. You know, just to clarify for the courts what we mean.
Well, I think, you know, there are completely different operative philosophies between the Democrats and the Republicans in the Congress, Grant. And one of them is that the Republicans are active and activist and busy. And so there's another one of these assaults on human decency every other minute, it seems.
Yeah, one awful thing after the next.
Right. Our side, on the other hand, we do what? Why aren't we? Because, see, anything, you know, the Republicans just throw stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And sometimes even they're surprised by what does and doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a majority in the Senate. Why aren't we doing it? I mean, look at what Bernie Sanders did. And granted, he's an independent, but he's an FDR Democrat is what it boils down to.
Well, sure. No, I looked at the list, though, Bob, of all the Democrats that voted against it. Frankly, they're, you know, in an idiocracy kind of way, getting paid, you know. I mean, they're just getting paid.
Getting paid,
you know. They're just getting
F you,
paid.
I'm eating.
That's right. That's what I see. I mean, it's like they're Baucus, Stabenow, you know. I mean, they're just getting paid, and they don't care what happens. It's obvious. So that's your big... I don't know. If there's any way to reform the Democratic Party, good luck, but I just don't see it. You know, these guys are just bought. It's a plutocrats club, and they're bought.
And it's a big club, and you ain't in it.
Yeah. Basically. We ain't in the club.
Nope.
So anyway, that's... But I'd like to see him persistently chip away at this, because if there's going to be protests against Monsanto, I'm very proud of my Senator Merkley, who's trying to reverse the Monsanto Protection Act or repeal it.
Right.
So there are efforts out there, and I'm hoping that perhaps in conjunction with the marches against this one company by name, you know, that somehow it'll start getting through to the legislators. That perhaps the winds ought to change direction for a while, you know, and they need to go along with some of this stuff, despite the money. Ooh, I said it, the Pharisee.
Yeah, but it's real.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what.
Well, if there's good news to be taken out of it, you know, the quote that the pull quote from Senator Sanders was that today's vote is a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tells me that he's not walking away from it. He's going to keep hammering
cool.
on it.
Cool. Yeah. Actually, you know, if the Republicans can just sit there and chip away at stuff, so can we.
Following up on the information you brought to the table, Grant, Jack in Shreveport has dropped an article by for me. More than 400 cities in 38 countries are hosting marches against Monsanto.
Yep.
New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, and Louisiana, because that happens to be where Jack is in Louisiana. But I'm sure St. Louis, Washington, D.C., New York, Boston. Let me see if there's a list here.
I agree with what you said, too. They're setting us up for a famine. You know, and you know, it's years ago, even, I did some computer work for a seed company, and they test all of their stuff for genetic contamination at all times to protect their brand. And, you know, we're sitting around just shooting the shit, and it's like, well, you know, there's a lot of prophecies about famines and this kind of thing and this ebb and flow. What do you suppose might cause that? You know, said, well, okay, let's take a look at it. Monocrops, based on, you know, stuff that you can't eat. You know, corn number two, was it, you said?
Yeah, number two, field grade Roundup Ready corn.
Roundup Ready corn. You know, yeah, I mean, but you can't eat it. And it's, you know, it makes perfect sense. You start messing with that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, I remember back there was this thing that they were doing trying to get, I think it was for the development of biofuels. Very nearly set off a famine already, even within our own sort of framework, you know, just because they were dirting around with soil bacteria, you know, and
well, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the law of unintended consequences has operated on a number of occasions throughout human history, Grant. I mean, agriculture itself, at least way back in the day when I was a little baby college student, you know, we were taught about the way that agriculture may have come about in the first place. You walk through the fields of grass with a basket as a hunter-gatherer, and you shake it, and the stuff that falls off in the basket, you go and you eat. So you unintendedly genetically preselected for grains that hang on to the stalk,
sure.
Which means after a while they don't just shake off in the basket anymore, and you got to stop and take care of them because the grains that fall off also reseed the crop. And there are, for instance, real world examples of that in the time that I got to spend among, and it was a tremendous privilege, among my new friends up in northern Wisconsin. I learned about the wild rice harvest up there along the shores of Lake Superior.
Yeah.
And it's this really cool process where you take a canoe and you go along the marges there in the wild rice, and they're kind of like bats, and you just gently bend it over and shake a little bit, and the wild rice falls into the canoe, and then you let it back up, and some wild rice falls back into the water, thereby regerminating the crop.
Right. Well, I mean, back when you were telling me, you know, they had it about licked when, you know, you got fish, you've got rice, all that kind of stuff. I just kind of, you know, lulled that around, and it's just what an awesome thing, you know, to be able to do that. Just live in a place, and there's plenty of organic, basically organic food available all the time. I mean, that's just, it seems like a fantasy now, don't you think?
Yeah, and by the way, Kate just confirming for me from out on the front range that yeah, there's a march in St. Louis. I'm looking at the map here for the march on Monsanto. There will be 1,000 plus attendees in places like D.C., St. Louis, 2,500 plus attendees in Miami, and God, where is that? Dallas? No, that's Austin. 1,000 plus attendees in San Antonio and Houston. Denver is slated to have 2,500 plus. Chicago, 2,500 plus. Toronto, 2,500. And this is just North America.
Yeah.
L.A., San Diego.
I think there's going to be a showing in India particularly.
I'm looking at the world map. There's only one slated for India, and it's not that big.
I'm surprised.
But zooming in on Europe, 2,500 plus in Paris, 2,500 plus in Brussels, 2,500 plus in London, 1,000 plus in Munich.
Cool.
Looks like 2,500 plus in Vienna, 2,500 plus in Berlin, 1,000 plus in Lisbon, 1,000 plus in Athens. I mean, this is pretty astonishing. 2,500 plus in Stockholm, in Oslo. And that's just the 2,500 pluses. There are markers for 1,000 plus, of which there are many, and markers for just somebody's going to go out with a sign. And you know what? It's really cool to be part of a big, big group like that. But sometimes the real heroism lies in having the courage of your convictions and being the only person standing there with a sign.
I hear you.
There's one scheduled for Charleston.
Interesting.
This is not like big cities only. Just looking at 2,500 plus in Mexico City. If anybody's, you know, being as how that's the cradle of maize, if anybody's got a right to gripe about the destruction of, a few millennia worth of basic human skull sweat that led from an innocuous looking grass to, you know, the corn is as high as an elephant's eye and it's going to grow right on up to the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people of the Valley of Mexico and the Maya Highlands of Guatemala and Honduras.
I agree.
But goodness gracious, I mean, Wichita, Kansas, there's one scheduled. Topeka, Kansas, there's one scheduled. And you know what? I bet some people will come out for that because the abuse, you know, the abuse that farmers have been subjected to over this profiteering horseshit, if I may.
Yep. Yep.
St. Paul, Minnesota expects more than 1,000 people. I mean, good God. Somebody's going to hold a sign in St. Joseph, South Dakota. 55 people are going to show up in St. Joseph, South Dakota.
Yeah.
60 people are going to show up in Billings, Montana. 350 people are going to show up in Bozeman, Montana. This is the kind of stuff that scares that scares the predators half to damn death.
Goody.
For your part, 4,615 human beings are signed up in Portland.
Plus one.
Plus one.
Thank you, plus one. I'm going to shuffle my feet down there.
Good on you. Good on you, Grant. And I mean, just going down the coast a little bit. Let's see. 1,927 people signed up in Sacramento. Oddly enough, no one has signed up in San Francisco. Zero people are going.
That's bizarre.
Let's see. 455 people are going in Oakland.
Oh, okay.
208 people are going in Benicia.
Oh, Benicia.
Yeah.
Great little artist community, by the way.
511 people are going in Santa Rosa.
Okay.
290 in Monterey.
Cool.
294 in San Luis Obispo. 1,141 in Venice, California.
I got a question, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so all this is going to happen. Now, the question I have about the lamestream media, is it going to be faint praise or shall we say faint coverage, or is it just going to be tamping it down or misconstruing it somehow?
Look, this is another case of us being responsible for being the media. Do not expect I don't know. Is there a toddler whose foot that Wolf Blitzer can grope? But it's Saturday, and you know Wolf don't work weekends.
That's funny.
So, I know this from hard experience. For instance, let me just zoom back out here and have a quick look over to the district. Let's see. 1,886 people are signed up to show up at Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C. It will not be covered by any of the local TV stations. Maybe one. Maybe public radio or public TV. Or, you know, bless her heart, Amy Goodman might show up or so, you know, for one of these things somewhere. But no, the for-profit media will not cover it. It will not, and you know, the way they operate, if we didn't tell you about it, it didn't happen. Right?
Right. Total Winston. Okay.
I mean, I look here, let's see. 912 people have signed up for Pittsburgh. Now, let's go down here. How about this? 178 people are going to show up in Birmingham. 1,990 are going to show up in Atlanta. 365 people have signed up to go in Mobile, Alabama. Now, it may not sound like a lot, but I want to return to my previous statement.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the guts to show up in Birmingham, or good God, Gadsden, Alabama, 117 people have signed up to go. That means something. And bless its heart, one of my favorite cities of the South, one of my favorite cities, Nash Vegas, 1,236 people in Nash Vegas have said they're going to show up. Metro Riverfront Park in Nashville. That means something. 484 people in Memphis. That's a big deal. A very big deal. Asheville, North Carolina is kind of an enclave of progressive folks. There are 1,831 people signed up to go to Pack Square Park in Asheville, North Carolina. Now, here's the trick, Grant.
Yeah.
How do you translate that into action? How do you, so you've got this collective, collection, this aggregation of goodwill and determination. How do you then turn around and make sure that it becomes meaningful in terms of political pressure? Because, like it or not, and I've had this conversation recently, and it's not a pleasant conversation when people resist the idea.
Mm-hmm.
While Dave was talking about, you know, he thinks the system's just going to collapse, and he's just kind of waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying. I hope I'm not mischaracterizing him in saying that.
I think he thinks it's going to fail, but I don't think he's just going to thumb up ass about it. I think he's going to be doing something local.
Yeah. I get that. But right now, I mean, Bernie Sanders introduced this amendment to the Farm Bill.
Yeah.
That's political action. How do we take 365 people showing up in Mobile, Alabama, and turn that into making, because I'm trying to use an extreme example here, Grant, how do we take 365 people showing up in Mobile, Alabama, and turn that into political action to get the attention of Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III?
The only thing I can think of is the cool thing about these is it's a marvelous place for people to interconnect and begin local. It's a good excuse to start something.
Bingo.
You connect with other people, you start, you know, you can start camping out at the congressional and or senator their home office there. You can start calling if they still have fax machines, fax campaign. I mean, you just have to keep chipping on them, and you're the squeaky wheel.
Or maybe you decide tomorrow when there are 365 of you gathered together somewhere in Mobile, Alabama, that the 365 of you are going to get together again, and you're going to go and visit Senator Sessions' office in Mobile.
There you go. Exactly. Plus, the beautiful thing is all of the friendships, alliances, and relationships that will come. Some of my best friends now I've met at protests, one of which I have great respect for. I met at the Wisconsin Sympathy protest here in Portland. You know, it's just, this is how things hook up. You know, and it's around a great cause. And it's not a wedge issue. This is your rice bowl, you know. And this is the difference between famine and a survivable future. You know, one of the, you know, top deadly things that's going to do in great swaths of the population is handled with this issue, if we handle it. So, it's a great cause.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And so, that's kind of what I see. And if, you know, if it also translates, within the connections, it translates into very concrete local actions to whatever you can do. I think Chris Hedges said it best. Whatever you can do to fuck them up, basically, and disconnect from any dependence upon them for your sustenance, that is fucking them up. You know, if people suddenly had a car that generated its own energy and didn't need gasoline and just stopped buying all of a sudden, look, that thing would just go apoplectic, that little construct they've got to sell gas. You know, same kind of thing with food. If it just starts ripping away all of our dependence on these guys, little bit by little bit even, it's helping. And that's not even political action. That's just local concrete action, you know. But I think a lot of good things are going to come from this. There's enough of a critical mass to really do something, I think, with this. I was unaware of how many people were actually signed up.
It's huge.
Right off the list.
And thanks to Jack for sending along the link that had the link in it that I could go and use to find out what was going on.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the kind of thing that affects the ability of the species to go on being the species.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to that thing that set Chris in California off, the idea that the Bush administration was out there shucking and jiving for the Monsanto folks, you know, after we blew up Iraq. We're here, we're America, we're bringing you some seed. Now, you're going to have to buy this next year, all right?
Yeah. Here's your caller. Want some pie?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. On every level, I mean, it's just, I don't even want to think about Iraq. I mean, on every level, that thing is just pooched. It was like a neocon wet dream, what they did, and it just completely turned to shit on every single possible level there is.
Well, that's because, you know, it was run by a George Bush event, and therefore, well, you know, they can screw up a two-car funeral.
Basically. You got that right. I told you, Bob, I mean, you know, the average people are going to come up with a better future and a better solution than this clutch of sociopaths could even conceive. It's going to happen. You know, their cause is righteous. They're free of sociopathy. That's a huge plus. They have the best interest of their offspring and the offspring of their neighbor in mind. It's hard to mess that up.
Yeah.
It really is.
The dynamic human presence involved with some of this stuff. 24 people are going in Elkhorn, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Go, Elkhorn, go.
That's right.
687 people are showing up in Madison, Wisconsin.
Cool.
They're showing up at the Wisconsin State Capitol. I'm sure that Governor Snot Walker
will absent himself from the proceedings.
I saw something flying by about Citizen Coke. There's a documentary out there.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that.
How money just they just did a money rush on that whole state and just totally bowled over the citizenry.
And now, oddly enough, Scott Walker is out there making the argument that during his recall election, that the IRS scandal was designed to keep voters home. It was a voter suppression effort because the Tea Party groups never got off the ground.
Well, that's what voter suppression looks like. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, just another case of the man keeping a white man down. White like me, you know.
That's right.
Hey, Grant, you have a good weekend, my friend.
Take care, man.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Grant, calling from Portland. Somewhere tomorrow, it's going to be a lovely day. And it would be a lovely day to get out and make your voice heard in support of not subjecting the planet to famine. Because that's where this goes. You know, you don't have to make arguments about steering tornadoes and black helicopters. And that's one of the things that gets me a little bit worked up about things like that, is that it is not nearly as complicated as some people are pointing out. I'm still waiting to hear Alex Jones declare that the government bombed the Skagit River Bridge in Washington.
Clearly it was a false flag attack. That was a government that was a government wide load that hit that bridge pier, and nobody knows, but the whole thing was just loaded with dynamite and it was remote controlled.
There really are conspiracies out there, you see. But they're not this stuff that
Alex Jones
talks about, or the Beckerhead, or any of these right-wingers. There are conspiracies out there, because conspiracy is a fairly simple concept. Conspiracy is an agreement by two or more people to do an illegal act, after which one or more of them take a substantial step toward the commission of the act. That's pretty broad, isn't it? So when, for instance, when the Monsanto rep shows up in, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Turd's office, and says, "Senator Turd, Sessions, I got you a big old heaping bag of money here. Look at all that money, Senator." And the senator says, "My, oh, my, wherever did that money come from?" And the Monsanto rep says, "Well, I don't know. I just found it sitting on the street on the way in here. I thought it might have been yours." And Senator Sessions says, "Well, it is. It is." And the Monsanto rep says, "Now, I'm sure you're going to be willing to filibuster if that communist Senator Sanders amendment about the Frankenfood labeling comes up now, won't you?" And Senator Sessions says, "Why, sure enough, I will." Sounds like bribery to me, but who am I, right? There are conspiracies, and they are engaged in by people who don't like you, or me, or us. But it doesn't require steering tornadoes, or coming up with a cockamamie explanation that a bunch of children in Connecticut who were stitched into pieces by a semi-automatic weapon wielded by a kid whose mama had been tormenting his brain You know, as soon as I get... Adam, Mama Lanza wants to talk to you. You know, as soon as Mama gets back from her cruise, I'm going to stick you in a nice home where you can write on the wall with purple crayons clutched between your toes, Adam. There's stuff out there. And 9 times out of 10, the stuff that they're telling you are conspiracies ain't, because it covers up for the ones that are kind of prosaic and usually driven only by nothing more than naked avarice and little else that really are there. Really are there. It's Friday on the front porch. It is about 23 minutes and change before the hour. We're halfway through the program this evening, and with an abundance of stuff to get after. But Friday on the Front Porch is also designed explicitly for broader conversation on a wider variety of topics. And toward that end, you're invited and welcome to jump right in. On the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, and on the more traditional telephonic lines, and there are six of them, 304-658-3333 is the number. A weird and sad story coming out of Maryland. Ordinarily, it would just be another story of crime in this country. Does the name Claude Alexander, or Claude Allen ring a bell with you? Claude Allen was George W. Bush's domestic policy advisor, and if I'm not mistaken, he was also a big-time fundy, evangelical type. And he was ballyhooed because he happened to be African-American in the Bush administration. Eventually, he got popped for trying to run a scam whereby he would take stuff from stores and then return it and get money for it. This story coming out of Montgomery County, Maryland. Well, now his son, his 20-year-old son, who is Claude Alexander Allen III, is under arrest as well. He is alleged to have chopped another human being to death with a hatchet. Jesus. The report was published by the Montgomery County Police Departments. It was published on their website. This morning at approximately 12:09 a.m., patrol units responded to a reported burglary that had just occurred at a residence in the 7200 block off Cliff Pine Drive in Gaithersburg. The caller, an adult male, reported that a subject had tried to break into the residence and that he had killed him. Officers arrived at the scene and located the caller and a deceased male. Preliminary investigation determined that this was not a burglary and the caller and the deceased individual were known to each other. Detectives have determined that a hatchet was used in the crime. The victim's body was located in a wooded area behind the residence. The victim was 25-year-old Michael Philip Harvey. The investigation continues. Ugh. Now, from hatchets to just slapping.
I was toddling over to Beckley one day a month or so ago. And yes, I turn on the for-profit radio in my car. And I turned on the old station, America's fifth largest radio, fifth smallest radio market. And I hear that the right-wing genius who held forth for so long in the mornings over there has been replaced by some woman delivered via satellite from Radio Rwanda. I listened long enough to learn that her name is Andrea Tanteros. The program was, of course, just a right-wing horror show. She took to the air yesterday, Andrea Tanteros did, to explain to people what it is that she thinks should happen to people who voted for Barack Obama. Really. Happened to. Jesus.
I can't imagine in all the experience I've had with the Justice Department ever. I've never heard of a reporter being named as an unindicted co-conspirator, basically saying they committed criminal conduct. This is obviously an attempt to pry into his records and into Fox's records. It's no different than what the IRS did in going after the conservative groups.
Except for the fact that what the IRS did was to go after not just so-called conservative and teabagging groups. They also went after liberal groups, progressive groups. They were vigorous. But, of course, now it's the right-wingers who... Well, we're being persecuted some more. Persecution. When, in fact, the whole IRS thing was just a screw-up. Done, arguably, while a still-embedded loyal Bushy was running the show. You know, just saying. Nobody's steering tornadoes here. But, yeah, the Fox is being persecuted.
He knows, he doesn't like Fox. Everybody in the Justice Department knew exactly whose bidding they were doing in trying to go after Fox.
That's right. They showed their hand. They bashed Fox so much that it's so believable. And
wait, this is logic? They bash Fox so much that it's believable. Okay. Tell us what else the little crawly things inside your skull are saying, Andrea.
When Fox said we're targets, clearly Media Matters and others have put us on a target list, and they said, "Oh, Fox is just crazy. They're just paranoid."
Yeah, because you know Media Matters, they run the IRS and the Justice Department. Very powerful. Paranoia much, Andrea? I mean, is it just because somebody else's ox is getting gored that I'm unsympathetic to this? Or is it that they are making something out of nothing? Is there something here? I don't know. But I'll tell you this much. Maybe it's the same way she's thinking, or trying to. They are adept at crying wolf when there's not so much as a puppy to be found in the neighborhood. But do, tell us more, Andrea, because that's not what this is about. It's about what you want done to us.
Really? Are we? Let me tell you how people and journalists are being treated these days. They are being stalked. They are being spied on. In Missouri, a news station fired an anchor who talked about the IRS shakedown. Yeah, fired. This is how corrupt.
You'll notice she's not playing us the soundbite of that. I mean, was the guy saying that he wanted to shoot someone in their genitals over it? I don't know.
The left is. And now, journalists can't even get into the IRS offices in Ohio, where this alleged scandal started, without an armed guard. This is what is happening to our press. This is Obama's America.
Wait for it. Here it comes. You know it's coming. You know what's next. This is Obama's America. Dot, dot, dot. Fill in the blank. What's coming? Come on. Andrea.
It's like the Soviet Union.
Score! Goal! That's right. It's like the Soviet Union. Just like the Soviet Union. Because after all, that one is a Kenyan Marxist Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people. You can't resist, can they? They just have to say, morning, morning, like the Soviet Union, just like it, morning.
He said he changed the country. He said it. He said it. He said it. And a lot of people voted for him.
Okay, that's where, now, you and me, we have these little conversations from time to time, and I'll say things like, I sure would like to go door knocking in, say, Steve King's or Michelle Bachmann's or Louis Gohmert. We got a Gohmert story here. I played the sound for Agnes and had to peel her off the ceiling. But we just want to go and, you know, maybe bus tour. Hey, look, there's a Gohmert voter. Oddly enough, this is one of those days when they're not picking their teeth with their toenail clippings. Notice the lack of shoelaces. You know? Because we're mean lefties. On the other hand, if you're tuning in to right-wing radio, especially something produced by Radio Rwanda, you gotta give the knuckle walkers and the mouth breathers and the lawful gun owners out there a little bit of red meat to gnaw on around the campfire.
And if you see any of those people today, do me a favor, punch them in the face.
You got that? Do we need context? Because, you know, they're always saying they were taken out of context. I won't talk. We'll just... Yeah. Come on back, Andrea. Don't hide. Oh, I'll probably have to reload the page. She went and hid. If you see any of those people today, by people, she means a lot of people voted for Barack Obama. If you see any of those people today, punch them in the face. Punch them in the face. You know, from time to time, we'll be out driving around, Agnes, me, the kids, and we'll see some rusted out 29-year-old Chevy truck or rusted out car, and it'll have a Bush Cheney sticker still on it or a McCain Palin sticker still on it. And mostly we just, because I'm under strict orders from Agnes, I have to keep driving, eyes on the road, but everybody else in the car just kind of looks at them as we drive by. Just trying to understand in 2013 who still toddles around with a Bush Cheney or a McCain Palin sticker on their car. I just want to see. Now, nobody talks about pulling over and punching them in the face. And, of course, let the record reflect, as it were, that Andrea Tanteros and none of the other people at Radio Rwanda were anywhere to be found when George Bush's domestic spying scandal broke. Because that was okay domestic spying. And that wasn't just some people at the AP or some goon at Radio Rwanda. That was everybody in the country. Agent Fred down there in the bowels of the NSA listening for keywords. I'm telling you, Aunt Matilda's brownie recipe is the bomb! You know? Pathetic.
I can't...
Pathetic. Just pathetic. So let's run back here and get us some context.
An armed guard. This is what is happening to our press. This is Obama's America. It's like the Soviet Union. He said he changed the country. He said it. He said it. He said it. And a lot of people voted for him. And if you see any of those people today, do me a favor. Punch him in the face.
Punch him in the face.
We'll be right back. Let's take a caller. We've got a caller real quick. Bob. In Moorhead, North Carolina.
See, it wasn't me. There's a lot of Bobs out there. But what does Bob have to say?
Listening on WTKF.
If what do you got? If, in light of the fact that he's listening to a Fox radio program, what he can be described as doing is actually, you know, listening or thinking. Or, right. Anyway, Bob, what were you bringing to the table?
Let's say today, Bob.
Your, what you had to say. And me and my buddy here, we work with the school system, and we're sitting there and we listen about the Obama. And I can't stand.
Oh, wait a minute. He works for the school system? He works for the school system? Oh, no. Somewhere. In North Carolina, now, he works for the school system. That means, it probably means he's not a teacher, fortunately. But still, you grieve for the children.
And Obama, I mean, I'm sorry, I know he's our president and all, but...
Wait. I want...
On WTKF. What do you got to say today, Bob?
What you had to say, and, me and my buddy here, we work with the school system, and we're sitting there and we listen about the Obama. And I can't stand Obama. I mean, I'm sorry. I know he's our president and all. But as soon as you were talking about, you know, about...
Yeah, me and my buddy, we work for the school system, and Saturday nights we have these dances where everybody wears a white sheet and pillowcase. I can't stand that Obama.
With Obama, and anybody punch him in the face, I was like, no, she didn't just say that.
Well,
and
to be
like,
clear,
oh, God,
to be clear,
now she's going to double down. See, the knuckle walker thinks that she said for somebody to go and punch Obama in the face. So she wants to be clear about that. She's a different kind of right-wing yammerhead. She's not out there hollering for anybody to... shoot Hillary Clinton in her genitals or anything. That's not, no, that, she doesn't roll like that.
I didn't say punch Obama in the face. You're going to get me arrested with this type of government.
Except for the fact that nobody's been arrested, not even the guy who suggested that he'd like to personally pull the trigger to fire a weapon into the genitals of both Hillary Clinton, and he would like to also shoot the President of the United States, because, you know, he said that. But he hasn't been arrested, and he's not in Guantanamo, and he's not on a hunger fast, and nobody's strapped him to a chair and run a hose up his nose and down into his belly to force feed him Ensure or anything. Nobody's done any of that to this guy, but that's Obama's America, right?
Bob, if you say that...
If somebody's talking about, you know, If someone voted for him,
if anyone that you know who voted for President Obama, smack him down.
You got
that? If you look at his record, everything what he's done, there's nothing positive.
If you look at his record, everything what he's done. Remember, dude works for the SKU system. Nothing's positive. And Andrea Tanteros, assuming that you voted for Barack Obama, and frankly, voting for Jill Stein doesn't get you out from under under this either, because she's even more liberal. I don't know how much she makes. I don't care. But she is distributed far and wide enough that her voice reaches Beckley, West Virginia. And that's the quality broadcasting that you get in little burgs like Beckley. Suggesting that people do nothing more, or suggesting that people who have done nothing more than express and exercise the franchise granted to them under the Constitution of the United States. That they be battered. Because an unconsented touching of an insulting or provoking nature is called battery. This woman who was at work today and will be at work on Tuesday and will be at work on Wednesday and who will continue to cash the paychecks, just got paid for telling her tiny-minded listeners to go out, find someone who voted for Barack Obama, and commit a battery upon them. Would this be an appropriate time for me to reference that phrase that I sort of created a little while back? Cold Civil War. Because this is that. In 2013, the public airwaves are being used by Andrea Tanteros to exhort people to go out and hit in the face, strike, batter people for voting for Barack. Sleep tight tonight, America. Andrea Tanteros is protecting your freedom. But think about it. She said hit him in the face. What happens? God, whatever, flying spaghetti monster, nothing, forbid. What happens when one of those lawful gun owners says, well, Andrea, I'll know you one better, by God. I'm going to go out and shoot me one in the face. Because, you see, it's happened before. Listening to Bill O'Reilly, listening to Sean Hannity, listening to Michael Savage, a man named Atkinson, some years back, left a long screed, had a bookshelf full of books by Hannity and O'Reilly and Bernie Goldberg. And one day, having listened and listened and listened and listened to that ilk, he explained in his manifesto that because he could not get to Washington, D.C. to kill Nancy Pelosi, he was going to go and kill some of the people who, quote-unquote, put her in office. And he felt like his best chance for finding a high concentration of those un-American traitors, that's how he referred to them, was to go to the evening's production of Annie, being put on by the children at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of the Tennessee Valley in Knoxville, Tennessee. And he went in there and he killed two people. before he was wrestled to the ground and immobilized by people who had no firearms, but only a fiery determination to make him stop hurting other people. Andrea Tantaros will cash her check. Andrea Tantaros will go to the store. Andrea Tantaros will buy a new pair of shoes, have her hair done, maybe get fitted for some new clothing, maybe take in a play. And cash check after check after check, paid to exhort her listeners to go and batter a person simply for being free enough to go and vote for the candidate of their choice. No, hell no, the Republicans don't engage in any voter suppression, now do they? Heck no! Cold Civil War. 304-658-3333 is the number to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
Well, some of this stuff tonight is exciting. Not really, but leave me speechless hearing some of this stuff, actually. About the schools, and this is Obama's world, and Obama's ruined everything, and if you know someone voted for him, you'll punch him in the face.
Yeah.
He's no saint. He's not my favorite, but I think he's done a whole lot less damage than the last guy did.
I think he has taken the powers that were handed him by Republicans who thought it would be just fine to give unlimited godlike powers to George W. Bush, but now they're a little nervous because, you know, that one's got them.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly. I think now they're all terrified that they have the same powers he had. So everything they can, including the kitchen sink, they throw on the wall to see it'll stick. And, I mean, they made the biggest deal of the smallest things. This whole Benghazi thing, yes, 4 people have died. It's a horrible thing, I admit. I don't want to see anyone die in any consulate anywhere around the world. But they didn't scream holy hell when 3,000 people died in New York City.
Well, I mean, yeah, they wanted to go kill Iraq.
Well, yes, I know. So, yes, I mean, we all know the story of Dick Cheney right after 9/11 happened, of Dick Cheney running through the White House screaming, "Get me everything you have on Saddam Hussein." Even though 6-7 months later, Bush was caught on tape at a prep conference saying, "We have no evidence showing that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with 9/11. Actually, no, I take that back. I'm sorry. That was a couple years later after they invaded Iraq under the premise of weapons of mass destruction. He was working against Saddam. I mean, it's all super, super, super fishy. I distinctly remember the day before 9/11, so 9/10/2001, there was a press conference, and it was it was Donald Rumsfeld. So he was talking about the Pentagon, and he came up with some figure. I want to say it was $9 trillion. And he came out and said, "We've misplaced it. We don't know where it went. We're looking for it." 9/11 happens. You never hear another word about it.
Yeah, we'll call you when we find it.
And then there's the other one when we were in Iraq and we flew in plane upon plane of money, and it disappeared. And then there's the amounts of money that Saddam Hussein supposedly had in tractor trailers that just disappeared too.
You know, money does that.
I know, and a digital age is pretty easy to make it move around, but when they're talking about solid cash, I mean, I realize that in some sense, $9 trillion is a made-up number that someone has assigned to an amount, but all these things, I just find that they can't tie the ends of these at all, but everything that Obama does, no matter what's good or bad, I mean, I heard Molloy last night rant about Obama, and I kind of am in the same boat he is. I don't want to think that he's corrupt from, like, day one, But he's done quite a few things that make you raise your eyebrow, like, what's this guy doing when he says one thing, but the other things he does are in stark contradiction to that.
Well, this is not the Obama Defense Network.
I don't see a lot of
friends. But I'm also a political pragmatist who does understand a little bit about the system and how it works or how it functions or dysfunctions in the current instance. And so I do. Right. You know, I remember day one. I was actually in Washington D.C. When the news broke that he had signed the executive order closing Guantanamo Bay. Remember that?
I remember that, and then 4 years went by, nothing happened.
Right. Why did nothing happen?
Because the Republicans fought against it.
Because the Congress stepped in, and some Democrats, too, and said, no, hell no, we're going to keep on torturing those people down there, whether they're innocent or not. And they immediately denied... And I know it's kind of weird to think that it takes government funding to shut something down, but it really does. And so they immediately passed a bill saying no funds for closing Guantanamo. And so Guantanamo didn't get closed.
So here we are again. He's asked them, the Congress, to take up the bill and close it down, but we all know in our hearts of hearts it won't be closed. And most likely those, 90 prisoners have been cleared to go home, won't go home today. They probably won't go home in 10 years. They'll probably be there.
Never mind the dependent clause, prepositional phrase, what have you. How about we just say, they won't go home.
No, they won't. They've been disappeared to Guantanamo. We know where they are, but...
And the fact that, and from the walk a mile in somebody else's shoes standpoint, Jeremy, how long would you have to be warehoused and tortured before you, Jeremy, decided it was no longer worth it? And that the only power you had on this planet was to take away from your captors the ability to further harass, harangue, torture, and torment you?
I can honestly say I think it'd be about a week. Tops. It might be 2 or 3 days of me. I'm not too good with pain and suffering, and I wouldn't just tolerate being tortured, to whatever extent. I wouldn't last the 10 years some of these guys would last, I can guarantee that. It's funny, because I had a pretty good acquaintance. I have more of an acquaintance now. I used to work with him, but he worked at Guantanamo for quite a few years. And he said that he was not afraid of a single person in Guantanamo that was there under arrest. Not a single person. He said they were just like you and I. They crack jokes, laugh about this, laugh about that, poke fun at certain things. Even the ones that didn't quite understand English were still decent people. They didn't treat you bad unless you treated them bad. And that's when we had prisoners of war there.
And remember, there's a hunger strike going on now, but suicide is nothing new at Guantanamo. In fact, it probably stems from the fact that there were suicides among the concentration camp prisoners at Guantanamo that has prompted the current response. I mean, it is torture. Let's understand this very clearly. It is torture to strap a human being into a chair and force a medical tube up the nose, down the back of the throat, and into the stomach. And to do it day after day after day after day. To torment someone into continuing to live.
Yeah, I was going to say, to keep someone alive just so you can have that over them. If you can control nothing else, they want to control their life to live or die. I mean... I don't have a whole lot to say. I just kind of want to call in my discuss on that. But also, I wanted to say for the second time in 2 years, Vermont's made national news for our flooding. Where
flooding is not something you normally expect?
Well, we have seasonal, occasional things, but no. I mean, torrential downpours where roads are washed out and towns are cut off to some degree. Yeah, just basic downpours. It's the remnants from the storm that hit Oklahoma, basically, is what's hitting us now. But, again, this is the second time in 2 years, and specifically in my lifetime, that I remember seeing us make national news for flooding that's tearing up the state.
Jesus.
But don't worry, there's no global warming. It's no such thing. It's all in your head. They're just making up those numbers.
And sometimes Vermont just floods.
And sometimes Vermont just floods. It happened 10,000 years ago during the Ice Age when the ice sheet moved out. But yeah. Bob, have a good weekend. I really have nothing else to say. I was kind of disgusted.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. Sometimes that's enough.
That's it.
All right. Bye now.
Yeah. Bye.
Calling from flooding Vermont. It's our buddy Jeremy. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing all right. The conversation inspired me to look up the March on Monsanto Denver Facebook page. And according to the Facebook page, they sent out something like 37,000 invitations, and almost 4,000 people are saying they're going. So it might be a interesting gathering.
It looks like it's going to be a big to-do in Denver. I was looking at the map there, yeah. I trust you'll be there.
Yes, you bet. Also, Jeff Smith, I don't know if you know his work at all, but he's been featured in a couple of the documentaries about GMOs. I think one called Genetic Roulette and a couple others. So he's going to be speaking, and apparently there's going to be music, and yeah, it's right by the Capitol building. And Denver has a good kind of civic space downtown. It's called Civic Center. I'm sure some convenience stores want to take over that property and, you know, put up come-and-goes and mini-marts or whatever, but it's still a public space, and we routinely have gatherings there. And certainly the right-wingers are there, too, on their issues. The Tea Party people would gather there. And but tomorrow's a march on Monsanto, and they had another massive gathering there on 420. You know, that kind of marijuana legalization effort.
Right.
And I don't know if you saw it in the news, but towards the end of that gathering, somebody shot off a gun a few times, and it caused kind of a stampede, and it was really terrible to see, because the gathering that day, I've been to a lot of festivals and protests and stuff. That was one of the most joyful, cool get-togethers I had ever been to. I mean, talk about a mix of race, ethnicity, class, age, physical capability. There were more disabled people at that get-together. Great speakers, great music. And towards the end, they had a hip-hop guy do his music, and fortunately it was about an hour past 4:20, so about half the crowd had left, but a few of us had stayed and were listening to this hip hop, and this protest was really becoming a party. And yeah, and then these shots went off, and you know, a lot of people, it was scary, people started running and running over people, and but hopefully, you know, like the Boston Marathon with their tragedy, they promised to come back next year even bigger, so I'm hoping we'll do the same.
I hope so, too. And, when you go tomorrow, just sort of keep an eye out for the Alex Jones crowd. That's the only thing I would ask.
I know they'll be there for sure, and I'm expecting that they'll be handing out the Inside Job DVDs that, you know, are also Alex Jones promo material.
Right.
Or maybe they'll have a new one on steering tornadoes, or I love that impersonation you were doing regarding how that bridge collapsing was probably an inside job, and
everything is.
Right. And no doubt a planned explosion.
Yeah, it was all masterminded from the HAARP headquarters in the North Arctic.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And what you were saying about the conspiracies, too, was spot on. You know, we need to be discriminating in our, you know, what theories we're, we think have credence. And there are some being floated out there that are really overshadowing some others.
Well, for God's sakes, the Iraq War was a giant conspiracy.
Yeah.
And it really was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. And that was a great point about, you know, the seeds. We blow up the place and then sell them the seeds. And, you know, some agribusiness guy was appointed, like, the head of Iraq's agriculture ministry. You know, so it wasn't just about oil. It was about seeds and water and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I was thinking also recently about the just some of the language, the style of argumentation from this, what's called a truth movement, is so manipulative. There's this phrase, it's like a talking point that everybody uses, something like, huh, if you don't agree it's an inside job, well, you must believe the official story then. And, you know, it, so it puts a person on a defensive stance, you know, well, gee, I don't want to believe it. What are they saying exactly there? If the official story is that there are people in other countries who are so sick of us bombing their lands, taking their seeds, taking their oil, setting up torture chambers,
destroying their heritage.
Yeah, yeah. That they may have done something in return? Blowback? Yeah, that, if that's the official story, it's way more plausible.
Well, I wish it was the official story, because if I recall the 9/11 Commission report correctly, there was no inquiry into blowback. And that was what prompted,
right,
in one of those
right
moments when he was right for the wrong reasons, cranky old Ron Paul to use the word blowback and to be excoriated by every patriotic, God-fearing, liberty-loving Republican in America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right, that's right. So the official story is this absurd thing, and they try to pin it on a person who doesn't believe the inside job theories, and this important topic of blowback, it gets, like, taken off the shelf, out of the our discussion, and it's the issue that the establishment, more than anything, does not want us talking about. We're not, it is like a forbidden thought. And it also is a security, I mean, really, just for sake of security, to be honest about these issues, to really try to mitigate the chances that it's going to happen again. And that's what Medea Benjamin was yelling about so courageously the other day. You know, not only should we value the lives of the people we're killing, but again, it's making us less safe as well. Let's not kid ourselves about that.
And I have no issue with that. I was a little snarky about that, Preston, but just because I'm still mad at him over the whole, my goodness gracious, doesn't Rand Paul have large testicles, you know, thing.
I missed that completely. I don't know what you said, and I don't know what you're referencing.
Well, I'm still upset with Code Pink for being suckered in and hoodooed in on the Rand Paul not a filibuster over the Brennan nomination.
Oh, okay.
But after it was over, Medea and some of her colleagues delivered a dozen roses and a box of ball-shaped chocolates to Rand Paul because, and these are their words, not mine, he obviously has some big ones.
Okay, yeah. Well,
you know, so maybe maybe they could get some, maybe having Code Pink go in and scream at Rand Paul a little bit be effective, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think Medea, there's this clip of Medea at some talk by someone in the Defense Department, so-called Defense Department, what used to be called the War Department, more honestly.
Yeah, yeah, which it probably should still be called.
Yeah, yeah. And it's on YouTube, and oh boy, it was something else. And well, you know, sometimes they say, that takes balls. We could also say, you know, that takes Pig's Ovaries.
Right.
And there's actually a book of that title. And
no one handles that topic better than oh goodness me, why can't, his name has escaped me now. It was on the Lib cruise with him. He shares airtime with Stephanie Miller from time to time. Funny guy. Somebody will tell me.
Mark Maron, maybe?
No. Has a show on Disney. Oh darn it!
Well, while you're thinking of that,
but anyway, yeah, he handles that very very well. He had us in stitches over that issue.
Yeah,
because Hal Sparks. There we go, Hal Sparks.
Okay.
His remark being that we say people have balls, but in fact, you ever seen a guy get kicked in them? There's not a lot of courage going on after that happens.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
But Hal was very funny on that topic. But
yeah,
the thing is, I appreciate continued pressure on the administration to get it right.
Yeah, and I appreciate your critique of Code Pink. And
well, it wasn't a critique. I mean, it was a critique of one thing that they did.
Yeah,
because it is hard enough to keep progressives together, Preston, without running off into the weeds and getting suckered by a fraud merchant like Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Because, and this is not because I'm some, Democrat till the day I die. No, that's not it. But the fact of the matter is what Rand Paul did was not in good faith. It wasn't a real filibuster. It was grandstanding for his presidential ambitions, nothing more and nothing less. And his complaints about drones were the complaints about drones that you hear on Alex Jones. He doesn't give a good goddamn about anybody who gets murdered in a drone strike at a wedding in Pakistan or Afghanistan or Yemen or anywhere else. He couldn't care less.
Yeah, and his comments recently about Apple certainly weren't acts of courage, sucking up to the corporate power, talking about how upset he was by the tone of this hearing with the poor put upon Apple CEO being asked all these hard questions about, various things, their tax loopholes.
Oh, he issued a personal apology to Tim Cook.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, definitely. Looking deeper at this libertarian stuff, it's...
Well, every now and then there will be some sort of patina.
Yeah.
It's
common ground.
Well, it's by design.
Yeah.
That's why the Paul people made such a concerted effort to get into Occupy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because they were looking to co-opt.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Did you happen to notice there's some internet radio host Pete Santilli?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I was really glad Alan Colmes called him out on his show, and Alan, he's out there amongst a lot of, Mike Molloy would call the flying monkey, right?
Yeah.
For sure, a lot of Hannity listener people tuning into Alan's show, and so to put that out there, and it's like, here's one of your reps, what do you think? And, that was good to see, but I went to, out of curiosity, I went to Santilli's website, and I noticed that he's selling a DVD.
Of course.
Yeah, and it's one of that genre of what happened to the Twin Towers.
Jesus.
Yeah, the genre of the various theories, again, we're all supposed to go chasing after and sink all this money into their DVDs. How much money has been funneled away from the multitude of important documentaries out there that so need consumer support, circulation. I'm really curious as to who's been funding this relentless stream of these inside job, like Loose Change DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
They were free.
Wouldn't you love to chase the money down on that?
I sure would.
Because, see, and I'll say this, and I'll probably get hate mail or somebody tell me that they're never going to contribute again or something like that. I can see stuff like that being
okay, this is my Alex Jones moment for the evening. I can see stuff like that, Preston, being CIA funded.
Yeah. There is, again, we believe there are conspiracies going on. And ironically, the movement posturing as calling out conspiracies is conducting a conspiracy. They talk a lot about cognitive infiltration. Watch out for their trying cognitive infiltration. And like Limbaugh, he's accusing others of what they are doing on a massive scale. And they're big on climate change. That's another conspiracy hoax. And the UN Agenda 21 and the and it's, you look at their evidence and it just collapses. And it's interesting. If you mention Media Matters, this is part of the truth movement, mention the resource like Media Matters immediately. If someone's been connected to this libertarian stuff, it's going to be, well, do you know George Soros? He's got money in there. Bring up Amy Goodman. From the Ford Foundation. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, well, can we put something out there real quick since you mentioned George Soros?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I hate to do this on your dime, but you brought it up, Preston. George, it's me, Bob. I will proudly walk naked down Main Street with a sign saying, George Soros gives me money. Just saying. Okay, all better now.
I would love, for some of the super rich to connect. Like Nader was saying, maybe only the super rich can save us. Float some money your way. That media conference I went to, that would not have happened, at least not on that scale, if not for the funding of a foundation. I forget which one. But there are foundations that help out Moyers and his important work.
But you and I often have these conversations, and I really welcome them, Preston. How do I put this? I don't want to compete, and I don't think I can, with an Amy Goodman or a Bill Moyers. They're heavy hitters. They're real journalists. I'm a guy trying to conduct a conversation among the folks that don't, and it's not an insult, among the folks who don't qualify as experts for the big time folks. As much as I love your intellect and your passion, I think it's fair to say you're never going to be invited on Rachel's show to opine about something. Nor, for that matter, am I.
Right.
But we have tremendous expertise in here. And so that's we started this thing out. We were going to be a regular radio show. We had the delay. We had stop tones for automation, all of that stuff. Guests night after night after night. And after a while, I looked up when I realized the quality of commentary and the quality of observation and conversation that was coming from folks who just were sharing a little bit of their everyday life with us, that there needed to be a place for that in the media landscape somewhere.
Yeah, the wisdom of the crowd, so often the masses are portrayed, that's the elitist attitude. The masses are ignorant and brutal and need to be oppressed to keep them under control. But the realization that, the people are all right and have some interesting things to say is good for flipping that hierarchy, And I think your show is, not a competitor, but would be so complimentary to, the work of Amy Goodman. Because I think that program, and I've had a couple friends tell me this, they just kind of, at times, feel kind of exhausted listening to it because it's so often relentlessly bad news that we do need to witness, we do need to know about, but we need to kind of hear the democracy part more, with the people's part. Well, they do a great job with that. I shouldn't be unfair, but this space where people can participate truly.
Yeah, and sometimes... Sometimes it's one of the most joyful things in the world for me, Preston, when, for instance, I'm not calling anybody out particularly,
But when somebody calls in here and we'll talk about one thing and then we'll just verge over, and the next thing you know, we're both cackling like geese laying eggs. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way conversation and community actually work. And that is how you stave off disaster fatigue and mm-hmm. outrage fatigue mm-hmm. and fatigue.
And build solidarity, you know, a little bit of, you know, community of consciousness in a sense. You know, they say it's not as real if we're not in each other's living room or something. And, you know, living room talks are important too, but just this exchange of ideas, I think, is really vital. And, I hope more of Amy Goodman's listeners find, you know, effort.
Well, you know, I want to thank you personally for the fact that, you know, you put those postings out on Facebook and tell people that you're listening. I really, really do appreciate that, because that's the only kind of PR we're ever going to get. Like I said, going back to when this thing was founded, the hope was that, you know, we were going to get funding. Nobody was ever looking to get rich. One of my goals was to pay Boss Man Wayne back for everything that he put in here by way of equipment and stuff. That hasn't happened yet. But, you know, the goal was to create something we thought would be a little bit special. You know, come at this from a slightly different angle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's deeply frustrating. I mean, you could... I watch things, and I know there are people out there doing something like this and working really, really hard at it. You know, I look at the model that the Young Turks built with their YouTube channel. David Pakman is doing a good job getting himself out there via YouTube. I don't know how they pull it off, because by the time I've read as much of the internet as I can humanly possibly stand, and I get to the end of the show,
mm-hmm.
End of the program, I'm zonked. I'm beat.
I bet.
And you know, once upon a time, you know, Agnes was back here answering the phones. Well, we did that for a couple or three years, and everything in the front end of the house, the mansion, began to go to hell. The children's grades started sliding. Chaos was erupting. There was our own little Kincaid family version of the Lord of the Flies taking place because Mommy wasn't there.
Right.
And so Agnes as producer. Agnes! Yeah.
Right. Okay. Agnes, I make a happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Yes. And you know, it's worth remembering this is Memorial Day weekend, of course.
Yeah.
And that began as Decoration Day, which was something that arose out of the Civil War as an attempt to remember the dead of that horror. And so that, you know, it's worth paying attention to. It's worth remembering.
Yeah. Definitely.
We'll go up and pay a visit to my Uncle Fred over the weekend, where he's planted in the ground not too far from here, never having come home from Europe in the Second World War. And, you know, we've got his portrait and it hangs on the wall. And it's worth remembering. It is worth remembering.
Definitely. Cool, man. Well, I'd be interested to... or what some of the other Horn family has to say tonight, but wanted to check in and say hey.
Well, I hope you'll report back from the event in Denver tomorrow, Preston.
I will do that. You bet. I'll be back in touch soon.
Okay, good deal. You take care.
You too.
Bye. The Horn's resident optimist, that's our buddy Preston, calling from Denver. Thanks. Thanks very much, Jeremy. The only contribution we've seen come in this evening. There's not much that's at least ostensibly legal that I would not do for some of that, because the right wing, you know, I mean, apparently George Soros is just running around dropping money on people. I guess I just have to figure out where he is so I can go get it dropped on us. Because it would be nice not to be here. Yeah, we're trying to raise $150, and we're at 10 at 15, 15 at 10, blah, blah, blah. But that's how this does go. That's how this has continued to go as it has, as well as it has, for as long as it has. So any help as we head into the weekend is much appreciated. PayPal button, you know where that is, headonradionetwork.com. So too with the traditional mail address. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good, Bob. And remember, after working all week, you're going to be a little more tired than just a hit or miss. So fatigue, as you know, is cumulative. So I'll already forgive you for being a little more tired. I didn't realize at the end of your shows, but I would think so, because I don't ever see you miss anything. It's really astounding. And and I also like to sit back and listen to your conversations with not only Preston, but Sandra, because, you know, and I am not very often very critical of the president, but I have been disappointed. But I also have my own interpretations of my disappointment. And of course, being a union guy, I would like to have seen the card check been pushed through. But there seems to be, you know, there was so many sense of urgency cases, and they had to prioritize their agenda. And, of course, card check for the listeners, basically just letting people have a right to sign a card that says, I would like and prefer union representation if given a chance, and this is my name, address, and telephone number. And actually consider stepping towards the threshold that Canada has when it comes to organizing.
Well, you know, Mark, one of the things that people don't understand about card check is that it's already in the law.
Uh-huh.
Card check can be the means by which people organize if it is consented to by the employer, which just, I mean, that makes my eyes roll back in my head.
Right.
For instance, card check is routinely used in Harry Reid's own state of Nevada because there's an agreement among, like, hotel and casino owners and so forth that's just how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was told that it is routinely used there. On the other hand, I still remember January 21st, 2009 in Washington, D.C. It was blue-ass cold, but we were at a progressive media summit hosted by the Progressive Caucus of the Senate. And I asked the question straight up about the Employee Free Choice Act, which was essentially card check.
Correct.
And... And that day, Harry Reid said, we will have a card check bill by summer. He just didn't say summer 2009.
He didn't say which summer, but he said some summer.
Yeah, you know, summer 2114.
Correct, right. Well, you know, Employee Free Choice Act.
But then the economy blew up, and you had people like Blanche Lincoln and Ben Nelson, respectively, probably not the right word, from Arkansas and Nebraska saying, oh, yeah, this wouldn't be a good time to allow workers to organize. Might be bad for the economy, which is a completely bogus argument. But they had, Ben Nelson, Blanche Lincoln, Mary Landrieu, all got on board with that idea. So, you know, goodbye, Democratic majority. Goodbye. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah, all 60 of the votes would have been necessary. So when you had...
Right, and we didn't even have Al Franken into the Senate yet.
I didn't realize Franken wasn't there yet at that point, but
no, he was still in the midst of his recount battle in January of 2009.
Well, that would your observation about Blanche Lincoln was I kind of like her as an individual, but she did take the side of the Walmart family, and that's why the AFL-CIO trying to support that. I think what was he, a lieutenant governor?
That's when Rahm Emanuel called them effing retards.
Which did he call? He called us retards. Who did
yeah,
he call
yeah,
them? Yeah.
Not over Blanche Lincoln. Primarying Blanche.
You mean the fact that we went after her?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, yeah, I guess he got his 56 schools closed, or he's trying to, right?
What a guy.
He's an interesting character. I'm sure his connections to Wall Street maybe a little closer than his brother.
Has nothing to do with his has nothing to do with his political decisions. I'm sure. Yours is the driven slush.
You know, Bob, I was quite the G.I. Joe, and coming back from New York, I think I mentioned on the last call, I talked my Marine Corps buddy, my retired FBI agent, into grabbing a couple beers at the local Mexican restaurant there outside of Washington, D.C. We both used to go to the rock quarries down in Homestead, and just as two Marines fresh out of the Corps, and see, just compete with each other shooting at stuff, and we shot at it. That's all you do in the Marine Corps is shoot. And you know, when you get to the rifle range, before you go to the rifle range, you do what's called snap in. That's basically dry fire for practically 2 weeks before you even are handed a weapon that's ready to be locked and loaded. But, you know, that's one of my observations about the Navy SEALs, you know, do have their capacity, but before you become a Navy SEAL, you have to be a certain rank before you're accepted in the program. Then you have to go through the program, and then they have a bunch of different training. And most of those SEALs are like in their mid-20s to early 30s, and then some all the way through their early 30s. And then you take a Marine has a weapon in his hand from practically, well, not day one, but almost day one in boot camp. So whether you're, you know, 17 or 18, you literally are with a weapon, and which... You know, weapons are just
tools,
and that's how they're. You know, their psychology is actually quite tremendous. They you know, it's not. You're not in a foxhole. You're in a fighting position. That's not your duffel bag. That's your sea bag, and that's your weapon. That's not a gun, and you're in the service. You're not in the military, and a lot of their psychology. They say, "Where are your people?" In the Marine Corps, they and at Maxim, you say, "Where are your Marines?" But yeah, that's from one Marine to another. If you're placed in a position of responsibility, say, hey, you know, Johnson, where are your Marines? Do you know where your Marines are at? You know, it's, do you know where your people are right now? Do you know where your people are? And it's how you keep pressure on each other to constantly be aware. But the, you were talking earlier, about shootings and people interrupting shootings, and the poor young lady who survived this assault here that you were just talking about, but, which made me think of when I went through the police academy after having been G.I. Joe all that time, they also show you how to confront situations where you're facing somebody when you are unarmed, whether they have a semi-automatic weapon or a revolver, and knives. And you don't spend a lot of time on it, but they do show you wrong things to do and some correct approaches. But if you look at the woman who interrupts the shooting at the Kathy... Giffords, or what was the congressman shot in Arizona, that shooter was reaching for a second clip, and a woman, I think she's been on TV here recently, and she was at the at Congress when they made the decision about something to do with weapons recently. I think she was 60, and when the little bastard dropped his clip, that's when she interceded on it, and the person who backed her up was a 65-year-old retired U.S. Army officer, and they got the little kooky bastard down on the ground. And then if you go to the shooting in Massachusetts, when the jackass gets out of a stolen Mercedes, he's walking down the street, pinning down four small town cops in the neighborhoods of Boston, and runs out of ammo. What did they do? They could have shot him, and that's a problem. You know, when you go from wearing a military uniform to jumping into law enforcement. Civilian law enforcement spends a lot of time training you about the Constitution and people's rights, and most legitimate academies approach about 6 months. So you do need transition time, but, you know, a Marine in that circumstance, you run out of ammo, it's sorry about your bad luck. Matter of fact, it's probably sorry about your bad luck prior to that. You know, it's just, they recon by fire, which in civilian law enforcement, it's against your constitutional rights to recon a situation by fire, and thank goodness. But what those policemen did was so much above and beyond the call of duty, they tackled him. And so people and their perceptions of guns.
Well, think about the police officer who prevented a great deal more carnage and slaughter at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin. That man got shot all to pieces, Mark. but he managed to live to tell the tale, and he managed to keep the shooter from going where he could harm a lot more people.
I didn't realize that the guy that interceded got chewed up pretty good. I think I remember somebody getting shot, but I didn't realize that he was. I think that's most shootings are very close in distance if there's two weapons involved.
Less than 3 feet in most instances?
That's right, Bob. Three to 5 feet. 5 to 7 is your next category. Most shootings are very close, so I'm not saying that people don't have the right to carry their guns and all that. I just took a different approach in my life.
That goes into my persistent inquiry of trying to understand the mindset of the guy who can't go to the Rippy Mart to get a loaf of bread without a .44 caliber Magnum six shooter strapped to his hip. There is no way, at least around here, okay? There's no way that he's anticipating some sort of violence. That's a statement. A compensation. It's something for the psychologist to deal with. But because of the landscape and the climate of this country, he gets to hide it all behind, I'm protecting freedom.
He's protecting all of us too, Bob.
Oh, absolutely. In his mind. Or in the messages that are reaching him through the fillings in his teeth. I mean, whatever.
Shortwave.
Right.
Shortwave radio.
Walmart is a grim place, and when dudes walk and pack and heat, and they don't, and sometimes it's not a revolver. Sometimes it's a semi-auto. Sometimes it's Glocks scare the piss out of me, Mark.
They do me too. I'm not a fan of the Glock weapon personally, just even in my own hands, let alone watching somebody else with one.
You know, dude goes bowling. That story. And on his backswing with his bowling ball, he's wearing a pair of shorts. It's just a casual night at the lanes. But he's got a revolver tucked in his loose baggy pants pocket. And on his backswing with the damn bowling ball, he causes the weapon to discharge and shoots himself in the leg. But he was protecting freedom. No.
Did you see the there's been one case about a week ago where a woman was at Starbucks. Did you see that, where she dropped her purse, the gun went off?
No, I didn't, but of course it did.
And it hit her friend in the leg. I'm not laughing at the friend. I'm not laughing at the shooter, the unbeknownst to me shooter,
But it seems in both of those instances where people survived, of course, that somehow or another, I think the argument that freedom was somehow protected is found wanting. Because your freedom is significantly diminished when you're laid up in a hospital room with a bullet hole in your leg.
Yeah, I guess your freedom just got curtailed by
the freedom protector.
Right.
Or the guy, this was in, and we talked about it on the show, program, the guy in Aurora, Colorado, of all places, who's given the little Johnny a ride home from school, but he's on his way to his nighttime job, his second job as a security guard, and so he goes to take his firearm that apparently he had with him at school, and goes to put it in the glove box, and shoots the kid in the leg.
Yeah, if the corporations take over police departments,
I don't think there's any fear of that happening, or any likelihood of that happening, because corporations, as long as they're making a profit, are more than happy just to let things go. Look at the story out of Josephine County, Oregon, from last night or the night before or whenever. A woman is in the process of about to be raped.
Right.
And she calls 911, who says, well, can you not just ask him to go away? We don't have any officers to send you. I'm sorry.
Can you have him come back in the morning?
Yeah. We might have somebody on duty in the morning. It's a night. Night shift is kind of thin around here.
You know, after you talked about that on the show, I went through Huffington Post quickly, and I am a big fan of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! As well. And she has physical courage, and I agree with your they've got some real she herself is an investigative journalist, in my opinion, very neat. But I was looking at Huffington Post, and they showed a picture of that guy you're talking about. His face, I mean, he was a rough looking little customer. You know, imagine that guy beating on your door, knowing that he was coming in. I don't care if you're man, woman, beast, or child. That's you know, and we're living in a country where we can't afford to.
But the sad thing out of that story, Mark, is that I'm sure somewhere, as sure as I am of hands and feet, I am sure that there's a right winger out there, some radio boy. Well, you know, she'd had a gun, she could have shooted him.
Oh, well, certainly, actually.
Or maybe he could have overpowered her and shot her.
Well, and you know, there are strong numbers to support that. You know, many weapons are taken from people. Like I tell my buddies at work, they'll, you know, I'm sitting in break rooms sometimes with hundreds of people. Of course, you usually sit with the same group that you work with. We have all the different crafts, depending on the size of the project you're on. But see, you know, you hear guys talking about guns and stuff, and I go, and then you'll hear, I can tell who's gun knowledgeable, and I go, now what would you guys do if someone comes up to you and you're in a red light and you're in your truck A guy's on foot and he walks up to your truck. What do you do then if he's got a gun in his hand and he's coming towards your truck? I'll do all this. I'm like, why not just drive off?
Step on the gas. You're in a car. He's on foot.
Like, dude, when I pull up to a light, you know, whether I'm in small town America or somewhere where a larger area or whatever. I pay attention to my distance. I pay attention. I try to anticipate where I'm going to be. I'm not that hyper-vigilant, but I can be at certain times, or if I get off a highway.
It pays to be that way. I mean, that's called being a defensive driver.
Sure, sure. If I, you know. I just get a kick out of all of this fear.
Yeah, well, see, if he'd done that, I'd have to make a split-second choice there, Mark, between whether I wanted my .357 mag with the stopping power or if I wanted the 17 rounds I got in my Glock 9mm. Now, if he's a ways away yet, I'll probably use a 9mm because I got more chances to take him down. But, you know, if he's real close, I want that stopping power.
Well, you know, I am a...
Why don't you step on the gas? You
know. Just drive off. You know, just drive. Look where he's coming from.
But you know what? That's a conversation that takes place in this state every day. But the fact of the matter remains, and you alluded to it correctly, that if you have a firearm in your home in this country, the odds are greater that it will be either used on you or someone in your house will use it to commit suicide than it will be used to stop a crime.
That's correct. I actually was in a situation over 20 years ago, whatever year this is, well over 20 years ago, and I was... an owner of a .45 legally, and it was asked by a person in my family if the weapon could be left for protection, and the threat wasn't explained to me who would be whoever the threat people were or what the circumstances were. I do know that at one point, with my father's position in small town city politics, they were looking to save some money, and so he did abolish the Lake Police Department, and they did throw Molotov cocktails in his basement of his home and his car. Now that was the situation later. people asking whether I could leave a weapon, and I actually, just being a good soldier, a veteran, I just, sure, brother needs a weapon, give him the weapon, but. And then I thought, you know, Mark, if something happens and you're actually talking about a case of depression and a person shoots themselves, that will depress you. And I don't want to be compliant in that. I don't want to be a part of that situation. I had the shit scared out of me as a kid, back in the late 60s. I was home, watching an apartment, and my old man called me and he says, hey Mark, you know, such and such a, yeah. And he said, you know, they're in a disagreement with some people right now and looking to get a gun, and they know that we have a gun, that you have a gun. Actually, as a kid, I had mentioned before that I'd earned money and I was taught how to shoot it way before I even got a weapon in my hand. I had been an owner of BB guns, but my father had such trust in me from our arrangement with sports. I mean, I was a daily athlete, with pitching. And actually, my backup pitcher on my baseball team got drafted by the Padres. So, I mean, pitching and shooting and hand-eye coordination and discipline and trust and family relationship and all that, just all kind. Anyway, he says to me, this family, if they knock on the door, just don't let them in. So here I am, a kid, about 10 or 11 years old, and that family did knock on the door, and I didn't let them in. And it was one of those older places where you have the one door, and I guess like an alcove and another door. And they rattled on that first door, and there was a storm. It was like out of the goddamn movies. And with the lightning, it was like the Twilight Zone. I was like, shit, I'm not even 13 yet. And I got shit going on. I'm like, well, they get a gun, and they go and settle some score, and they got the electric chair. So, you know, if people look at me because I'm clean cut looking, and I try to be clear spoken, and I carry myself with a little composure. But you can't always tell what people have actually literally gone through. Like I had when I worked at the embassy in Argentina for years, I just filed away in my mind. We were driven, if you needed a ride to the embassy, the Marines lived at that time about 10 miles away from the embassy in a civilian neighborhood, civilian house, and the drivers were former cops in civilian clothes driving you in an LTD Crown Victoria or a van, but you never knew exactly which vehicle would pick you up, and you could call and they'd come get you, and they would drive you to the embassy, and you're driven in either your physical workout clothes or you go in your civilian shirt and tie. But and they were tinted windows, and you had protection in the vehicles, and things are probably improved from that now. But a lot of times I would run for my own physical desires, but also change my pattern. I would always run the same way to the embassy. I'd stay on duty, and I'd maybe catch a ride home in the evening, and or vice versa, work nights and catch.
Well, I think you offer good practical advice for people just to be aware of their surroundings and their circumstances, and pay attention to the world that they're in, whether they're on foot, on wheels, or in a car, or even on a bus or a plane. Just, you know, be aware in the world. Mark, we got to hit it because we're up against
all
it,
right.
But you have a very good, and I'm sure for you it will be a thought-filled Memorial Day weekend.
Well, you know, from one brother to another, being from two different parts of the country, it is our Memorial Day for you and I. And I just would, I'll get out of your hair, but I just noticed the kid that's running that march was actually an Iraq veteran against the war, has now been co-opted, by the way, that march in Washington, D.C., that Kokesh. And so now he's now a right-winger. Happy Memorial Day to you too, Bob.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Yeah.
Our good friend Mark calling from Florida. And thus we close a broadcast week. It'll be a game time call as to whether there's a show Monday night or not. Rick Smith is on the way. Y'all take care and have a good weekend.